In this new segment of Advisor Revelations, the DPL team will discuss how to evaluate new solutions and address current challenges and the strategies that can help you grow your firm and AUM.
Welcome to the Advisor Revelations podcast. I am Joel Melchior, a consultant here at DPL Financial Partners. Today, we will discuss a topic I'm super excited about, the risks and benefits of RILAs. I would also like to introduce our guest, my colleague, who is a consultant here at DPL Financial Partners, Jeffrey Oberg. Jeffrey, thanks for taking the time to join us today. How are you doing today?
Absolutely. It's my pleasure to be here. Thanks, Joel.
All right. Before we start our discussion today, I just want to remind our listeners to please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite streaming app for updates. If anything we talk about today interests you, be sure to connect with a DPL consultant on our website, dplfp.com. All right, Jeffrey, just to let our listeners have a little bit of a better understanding of the type of firm you're with, your experience, can you share a little bit more about yourself and what you do here at DPL Financial Partners?
Yeah, so DPL is the leader in providing fee-based non-commissioned annuities to the RIA market. I joined DPL about 2 years ago, coming from the structured product world where I wholesaled structured products for 4 years. I've also been an advisor. I've been involved in life insurance and 401k plans. So pretty well-rounded view. You know, more pertinent to this conversation is that past 4 years in the structured product world.
Absolutely. And I know you and I have worked on the same team for a few years now, and I always appreciate hearing your unique perspectives on the industry and, of course, the world of structured products. Tell me a little bit, when you were an advisor, was that in the broker-dealer world or at an RIA?
No, I was a broker-dealer.
Okay.
Exactly.
Did you do a lot of annuities?
Did some annuities and, like I said, did some structured products there as well. So it was a nice kind of rounded view taken here to DPL. So when I'm talking with advisors, I can take a different perspective, you know, and kind of understand better where they're working and their needs being advisors, but also, like I said, take a holistic view of all the different products that I'm very familiar with and how they can be utilized by advisors.
Absolutely. Also, tell me a little bit more about your time working in the structured product world.
Yeah, so I was with InCapital, which is now Inspirits, and then Advisors Asset Management. We wholesaled structured products to both broker-dealers and RIAs. So I kind of got a real good sense of how broker-dealers use them, how advisors use them, what the buying process is like, their needs, and really where they add value to clients' portfolios.
Well, I appreciate that background, Jeffrey. Let's go ahead and dig into our topic for the podcast today. First of all, what is a RILA? I've been hearing a lot about them. I know this industry has a lot of jargon, so if you could break it down for us, that would be great. I know it's a large and rapid
growing area of the annuity world.
Yes, of the annuity world.
Some figures I've seen show that it's actually the fastest growing segment of annuity sales. You know, I don't have the exact figures in front of me. We could maybe throw them up on the screen here later on. But they are fast growing because, you know, and they were just introduced in the 2010. So they're a fairly new concept within annuities. I've seen some conversations out there with people who sell annuities who had no idea really what they are or what kind of licensing is required to sell them. But a RILA stands for Registered Index Linked Annuities. And they are annuities with downside protection in the form of a buffer. For advisors out there watching this who are familiar with buffered ETFs or buffered notes, they're really basically like a buffered note inside an annuity wrapper. They're tied typically to an underlying index, S&P being one of the most common ones. You've got buffered protection on the downside, 10, 20, 30, 40% buffers I've seen in these products. And really what a buffer does is a buffer absorbs losses if you have a negative outcome. So let's take, for example, that a client has a RILA or a buffered kind of product, simple point-to-point strategy over a one-year period. The insurance carrier is going to record the index level on the date that the annuity is issued. Then they're going to record the index level 12 months out, 1 year out. You're going to get upside participation. Usually it's one-to-one participation. Maybe there's a cap. Maybe it's uncapped. Maybe you have more than 100% participation. Maybe you don't, but usually it's at least 100% participation. And you're going to get all that on the upside. Now, if the index is negative, lessen the buffer, the client's going to be made whole. So let's say, like I said, your aforementioned 10% buffer, client invested $1,000, and S&P is down 9, the client's going to show $1,000 on their statement. They're not going to lose anything. Now, if the S&P is down more than 10%, let's say it's down 12, well, the client's only down 2. So the way to think about it is that in any negative environment, you have outperformed the underlying index.
That's a great way to look at it.
Exactly. And RILAs can be tied to S&P, NASDAQ, Russell, emerging markets, EFA, basically any index that you can think of. Usually it's some of the more common indexes the RILA can be tied to. And you can mix and match within an annuity. So you can say, hey, listen, I'm a little bit more optimistic on the S&P, so I'm going to go with a 10% buffer. Listen, I'm a little bit uncomfortable with emerging markets, but I want to have some exposure there. So rather than just, hey, buying it straight out and being exposed to the gains and the losses, why not buy one of those indexes inside an annuity and protect yourself on the downside if you have a poor outcome?
That's great. I appreciate you kind of spelling it out for us. I have a few questions. First of all, do you participate in dividends?
No, that's the other thing. So you're not directly invested in the underlier. So dividends are not counted or not included in this. It's strictly the underlier is simply used as a way to measure how the client's credited at the end of the term. By the way, a term can be 1 year, 3 years, 6 years. That's what most of them out there are. There may be some others out there. I've heard a 5 year possibly, but most of you're looking at 1, 3 and 5 year durations.
Okay, awesome. That does bring up another question for me. What does liquidity look like on an advisory RILA?
So advisory RILAs, well, at least the ones on our platform I can speak to, are 100% liquid in the sense that they do not have a surrender schedule. Some of them don't even have a market value adjustment period. So if you're looking at a 1 year duration, you can get in and out in a year. Theoretically, you can get in and out in less than a year. But when speaking with a client, let them know that if you're buying something with a 1 year duration, you should expect to stay in it for a year.
That makes sense. Talk to me about fees. What fees do they
have? Zero. None. So people say, well, this sounds too good to be true. How can they be getting downside protection in no fees? Quite frankly, what you're leveraging when buying one of these is you're leveraging the annuity, so the insurance providers, their general account, but also these insurance companies are some of the largest purchasers of options. So you're leveraging their ability to buy options in mass to then build in the downside protection for you and the upside participation. That's really where it's come from. So by getting that extra leverage, some of the terms we're seeing in the RILAs rival that or exceed that of what you're seeing in the buffered note marketplace as well because of that.
That's very interesting. I think that leads me to what my next question is, but where do these fit in a client's portfolio?
Yeah, so the common misperception, some of the people you might hear talking out there about saying, oh, the annuities are not the best, they're not great and all that. They're really, what they're doing is they're comparing these to equity markets, and that's really not where they fit in. Some people are proposing these are as an alternative to a bond portfolio. You know, I've got a great quote from Wade Fowler. We've got a wonderful research paper from Wade where he talks about where these fit in with the client's portfolio. And this is a quote from that white paper. He says, structured annuities can be viewed as an alternative to investing in other fixed assets, particularly bonds, but with higher potential returns, better Sharpe ratios, and greater upside capture. So if this is a white paper that we can share with anybody who's interested in reading in greater detail. But basically what he is saying is that these kind of fit in that segment of the bond portfolio for that very reason. You know, greater potential return, better Sharpe ratio, better upside capture.
Now, anything we can do to improve that client yield is great.
Exactly. Yep.
Help me think about what's client profile that I would look for that would be a good fit for a RILA.
The cautionary tale with RILAs, be perfectly blunt, put it out there, is that a RILA is exposed to the same limitations as any other kind of annuity in the sense that if you take the money out of the annuity before age 59 and a half or any annuity, you're exposed to 10% penalty by the IRS. So if a client is in their 40s or 50s and buying one of these, plan on being it in the long haul. But aside from that caveat there, where clients, the ideal profile here is somebody who is trying to take some risk off their balance sheet, who wants a substitution for the bond, perhaps somebody who is looking to leave a legacy. And then another use we're finding a lot of traction with is, hey, a client's looking to turn on income 5, 6, 7 years down the road. Well, there's some RILAs now that are designed specifically for that. It's the ability to grow your assets, as we've already described, and then turn on income within the same solution somewhere down the line. Now, you don't have to. And in that case, if you don't turn on income somewhere down the line, your portfolio has the ability to continue to grow. But it does give you that extra option to turn on income.
That's a great point.
So for that case, maybe a client who's 58, 59, 60, or wants to turn on income 65, 67 or later, or the client who has maybe a IRA portfolio. So you can utilize this product to turn on income maybe at RMD age, and the annuity can then shield some of the rest of their assets from having to take RMDs because you're utilizing the annuity, the lifetime income benefit, as your RMDs.
That's a really great point. That might be another discussion for a whole other podcast. But just as you're speaking through that, and I was just running through my mind, the first two kind of client profiles that popped up were one, maybe clients who have seen a lot of gains in the market over the last 2 years and would just like to take a little bit of risk off the table, lock in some of those gains, get some downside protection, but still be able to participate and have good growth on the upside.
Exactly. Yeah. De-risking your portfolio. Some of the solutions out there right now, if you're looking at a 3 or 6 year term on something like the S&P, now you're looking at getting 150, 120% participation. Translate that. Let's say you're in a 6 year product where you have 115% participation and the S&P is up 10. Well, now you've got a 15% return. Is that right? No, it's 11 and a half. Sorry, my mistake.
That's all good. But no, that increase in that yield is great.
So, you know, it's possible with enough upside market there, in that higher than 100%, greater than 100% participation, that could even potentially counter the dividends that the client might have received over that period of time as well.
Absolutely. The other client profile I was kind of thinking of was maybe a client who's been sitting on a lot of cash in the sidelines and they just wanting to dip their toes back in the water, but they're scared of getting in and then, of course, the market crashing. I was kind of thinking of maybe this would be a way to get them to start getting back into the market.
Yep. And also to that point here, let's say a client is in a product and they're 6 months in and they're getting close to that cap rate. So if they're in a segment that does have a cap, most of these annuities out there now give the ability to lock in where they are. Now, you might not get the full upside because it depends on the value of the options on that day that you lock in. But hey, if you see storm clouds on the horizon and you're at some point in and you're not quite yet to the end of that term, lock in. You can choose to go back in. You can sit on the sidelines in cash before you go in. You know, consult your DPL representative on what the options are within given products. But you're not necessarily exposed to all the potential losses there. You have some ability to control your outcome depending on where you are in the term.
No, that's a really good point. It seems like RILAs have a lot of flexibility and are a nice kind of a medium between a straight VA and like an FIA or something that has a guaranteed rate of return.
And by removing the commissions, also you have the liquidity, the ability there. So you don't feel like you're by going into the strategy, you're locked in for 4, 5, 6, 7 years or even longer. You have that ability to, okay, be in this. And then, hey, my needs have changed. I need income now and I'm not in an income product. Let me 1035 this into another solution for income, knowing that I'm not going to be exposed to surrender cost.
That's a great point. I also see a really good fit being with qualified dollars. Maybe for a client who is in the first 5 years of retirement or 5 years away from retirement, helping to mitigate some of those sequence of return risks.
Exactly. And like I said, as we already mentioned, the RMD shield. So now you can leave the rest of those assets to your beneficiaries because you haven't had to draw them down because the annuity is taking care of that RMD factor.
Yeah. I do have another question, Jeffrey. Why would I want to use a RILA as opposed to other buffered products that are out there?
Well, like I said, as we mentioned, now you're leveraging the buying power of the insurance carrier. So we've seen in some cases terms are better. than what you're finding in the buffered note world. Can't speak to the buffered ETF world, but that's a whole nother play. But also it's tax deferral. Maybe you're in a high tax bracket right now because of your earnings. You anticipate being in a lower tax bracket in retirement. Why not put off those potential or the tax hit you're going to have down the road? And also, you know, because you're not paying taxes, you have the ability to compound your growth over time as well.
Well, I think this has been a really good discussion, Jeffrey. Is there anything else that you want to make sure that we touch on as while we're wrapping up the RILA discussion?
Yeah, like I said, when I've been talking with advisors, RIAs, there's a perception that annuities are limited to certain uses and all. And the more you talk about it with people like Joel and I, the more you learn that in the annuity space, that these have a lot more uses than what most advisors are aware of. So with RILAs, we already touched upon bond alternative. We touched upon the potential income benefits. And then lastly, to that point, talk with us and see if there's a fit for the annuities in there. Quite frankly, we'll tell you if there's not. But then secondly, talk with your clients. We find that a lot of clients aren't even aware that they've got, or advisors aren't aware that some of the clients have annuities. And then for the clients who have RILAs, they might not even understand how they work. Let's have that conversation with you, put their mind at ease on what they have and the benefits or the detriments to owning what it is that they own.
I think that's a great point, Jeffrey, that you bring up about, existing annuity assets. I found RILAs are a good way to transition from, maybe a client owns an existing VA with income benefits on it that they really don't need anymore, but maybe now they'd like to take some risk off the table. They'd like to cut fees. And a RILA would be a good place for a 1035 exchange or an IRA transfer in that case.
Yeah, if the client has a risk tolerance of the VA, now you're necessarily giving up quite as much growth potential by going into the RILA as you might go into a fixed index annuity that has a pretty hard cap on something like the S&P. So you got greater growth potential. It's just like anything in our business. If you pull one string, another string is going to get shorter. So we're building in some protection, but not 100% protection. And that allows for greater growth potential than something like a fixed index annuity. So it's a nice step from the VA into a lower cost option in the RILA that's not quite taking a full step back that you might be taking going into a fixed index annuity.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
It's a kind of nice middle ground between the two.
Exactly. Well, Jeffrey, I appreciate you being a great partner and working with us here today. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you all.
And thanks, everyone, for joining the podcast. And again, let's connect at dplfp.com and subscribe for more episodes anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Thanks for listening. To hear more advisor revelations, go to dplfp.com and subscribe on your favorite podcast streaming app.